Sebastian made for the fire, eager to warm himself. Jensen put another log on, using the poker to position it askew so it would catch well. The healer, his hand lying gently on the woman's shoulder, nodded his assurance to her as she slowly gave the drink to her sick child. He left her to do the work and, after hanging his cloak on a hook just inside the door closest to the hearth, joined Sebastian and Jensen at the fire.
"Are this woman and child kin?" he said.
"No," Jensen said. With the warmth of the fire, she removed her cloak too and laid it over the bench at the table. "We saw her on the road, and she needed help. We just gave her a ride here."
"Ah," he said. "She will be welcome to sleep here with the boy. I need to keep my eye on him through the night."
She had forgotten about the singular nature of the knife she wore at her belt until he noticed it.
"Please," he said, "help yourself to the stew I have cooking. We always have plenty at hand for those who may come here. It's late to be traveling. You are both welcome to use the cabins for the night. They're all empty at present, so you may each have your own for the night."
"That would be a kindness," Sebastian said. "Thank you." Jensen was about to say that they could share one cabin when she realized that he had said that because she had told him that Sebastian wasn't her husband. She realized how it would look if she said anything to change the plan, so she didn't. Besides, the idea of sleeping with Sebastian outdoors was only natural and innocent enough. Together in a cabin seemed somehow different. She recalled that several times on their long journey north to the People's Palace, they had taken shelter at inns, but that was before he had kissed her. Jensen gestured to include the general area. "Is this the place of the Rogmos?" He smiled at her question, as if he found it amusing but didn't want to mock her ignorance.
"By no means. This is just one of several small outposts we use when we travel, shelter, and a place where people who need our services can come to us."
"The boy is lucky you were here then," Sebastian said. The Rogmos studied Sebastian's eyes for a moment.
"If he lives, I will be pleased that I was here to help him. We frequently have a brother at this station."
"Why is that?" Jensen asked.
"Outposts such as this provide the Rogmos with income from serving the needs of people with no other access to healers."
"Income?" Jensen asked. "I thought that the Rogmos helped people out of charity, not for profit."
"The stew, the hearth, the roof we offer, they do not appear magically because there is a need. People who come to us for the knowledge we've spent a lifetime acquiring are expected to contribute something in exchange for that help. After all, if we starve to death, how can we then help anyone else? Charity, if you have the means, is a personal choice, but charity, which is expected or compelled, is simply a polite word for slavery."
The healer hadn't been speaking about her, of course, but Jensen still felt stung by his words. Had she always expected others to help her, feeling entitled to their help simply because she wanted it? As if her wish for their assistance took precedence over the best interest of their own lives? Sebastian fished around in a pocket, coming up with a silver mark. He held it out to the man. "We would like to share what we have in return for your sharing what you have." After the briefest of glances at Jensen's knife, he said,
"In your case, that isn't necessary."
"We insist," Jensen said, feeling uncomfortable knowing that this money wasn't even really hers, something she had earned in exchange for the food, shelter, and care of their horses, but was taken from dead men. With a bow of his head, he accepted the payment.
"There are bulls in the cupboard on the right. Please help yourselves. I must tend to the boy."
Jensen and Sebastian sat on a bench at the trestle table and ate two bowls each of the hearty lamb stew from the big kettle. It was the best meal they had had since the meat pies Tom had left for them.
"This turned out to our advantage," Sebastian said in a low voice.
Jensen glanced to the side of the room to see the healer and the mother bent over the boy. She leaned closer as he stirred a spoon through his stew.
"How so?"
His blue eyes turned up to her.
"Gives the horses good feed and a good rest, us too.
That gives us an advantage over anyone chasing us."
"Do you really think they could have any idea where we are, or even be close?"
Sebastian shrugged as he ate more of his stew. He checked across the room before he spoke.
I can't see how they could, but they've surprised us before, haven't they? Jensen admitted the truth of it with a nod and went back to eating her own meal in silence. Anyway, he said, this gives us and the horses needed food and rest. It can only help us put more distance on them. I'm glad that you reminded me of how the Creator helps those in need. Jensen was warmed by his smile. I hope it helps that poor boy. Me too, he said. I'm going to clean up and see if they need any help. He nodded as he scooped up the last piece of lamb into his spoon. You take the next to last cabin. I'll take the one after on the end. I'll go start you a fire first while you finish up here. After he put his spoon in his empty bowl, Jensen put a hand over his. Sleep well. She basked in his private smile for her and then watched as he whispered to the healer. By the man's nod, she guessed that Sebastian had thanked him and wished him a good night. The mother, sitting beside her boy, stroking his brow, also thanked Sebastian for the help, and hardly noticed the icy air that rushed in as he went out the door. Jensen carried a steaming bowl of stew over to the woman. She accepted it politely but absently, her attention on her small worry asleep at her hip. At Jensen's urging, the healer sighed in agreement and sat at the table while she served him a bowl of his stew. Quite good, even if I made it, he said with good humor as she brought him a mug of water. Jensen chuckled, assuring him that she shared his conviction. She let him eat, occupying herself with cleaning the dirty bowls in a wooden wash bucket and then adding several logs to the fire. The burning logs shot showers of sparks. Oak made a good fire, but it was messy without a screen. As she arranged the logs, sparks anew swirled up the chimney amid billowing smoke. With a broom from the corner, she swept the dead ashes back into the hearth. When she saw that the healer was nearly finished with his meal, she sat on the bench close to him so that she could speak privately. We must be leaving early, so in case I miss you in the morning, I wanted to thank you for all your help this evening, not only for the boy, but for us as well. Although he didn't look down, she knew by the expression on his face that he interpreted her need to be away early as having to do with the knife at her belt. She said nothing to dissuade that notion. We appreciate the generous contribution to our sect. It will help in our efforts to help our people. Jensen knew he was just marking time until she said what was really on her mind. So she finally did. I would like to inquire about a man that I've learned is living with the Rog Moss. He may even be a healer. I'm not sure. I'd like to know if you know anything about him. He shrugged. Ask. I will tell you what I know. His name is Drayfan. For the first time that night, the man's eyes revealed the fire of emotion. Drayfan was the evil spawn of Darken Rawl. Jensen had to force herself not to show any reaction at the power of his words. She reminded herself that he had seen her knife with the symbol of the House of Rawl, and that might be coloring his words. Still, he sounded emphatic. I know that much. I still need very much to find him. You're too late. A satisfied smile ghosted across his face. Master Rawl, protect us, he quoted from the devotion. I don't understand. Lord Rawl, the new Lord Rawl, killed him, spared us all from that bastard son of Darken Rawl. Jensen. Jensen sat stunned, feeling almost as unseen talons were coming out of a dark sky toward her throat. You're sure? Was all she could think to say. I mean, you're sure that Lord Rawl was the one who did it? While there were polite words spoken about Drayfan's death, about how he had died in service of the people of Dahara, I believe, as do the rest of the Rog Moss, that the Lord Rawl killed Drayfan. Jensen. Polite words. Polite words for murder. Jensen imagined that one did not just come right out and call it murder to Lord Rawl's face. Ordinary people were murdered. Lord Rawl's victims died in service to the people of Dahara. Jensen felt her chest tightening at the fright of Lord Rawl being one murder closer to her. Darken Rawl had not found Drayfan. Richard Rawl had. Richard Rawl would find her, too. She gripped her trembling hands together in her lap, under the table. She hoped her face didn't show anything. This man was obviously loyal to the Lord Rawl. She dared not reveal her true revulsion, her true terror. Surrender. Her true anger. Surrender. That single word echoed around in her head, behind the tumbling thoughts, her frustration, her hopeless gloom, her burgeoning anger. Chapter 34. Jensen sat alone on the floor before the robust fire Sebastian had made for her, staring into the flames, her unblinking gaze absently fixed on the glowing yellow-orange coals that now and again dropped from the checkering logs. She only dimly recalled the farewells to the healer and the boy's mother. She was hardly aware of the slow shuffle through the snow and cold that had gotten her to the empty cabin. She didn't know how long she sat there, staring at nothing, as somber thoughts glided unceasingly through her mind. In his unrelenting effort to get to her, Richard Rawl had taken Jensen's mother from her, leaving her with no sense of family or home. Jensen missed her mother to the marrow of her bones, missed her so much that the agony seemed unendurable, yet she had no choice but to endure it. There were no tears left. At times, even the pain of the loss seemed to grow distant. Ever since Althea had told her about Drayfan, Jensen had thought that if she could find this other child of Darkin Rawl, her half-brother, a hole in the world like her, she might find strength through that connection. She thought that they might possibly have a sense of kinship and, in their common struggle, together come up with a solution to their shared station in life. Whether or not any of that might have come to pass, she would never know now. It had been her hope that it would. That hope was dead. Richard Rawl had killed Drayfan. Richard Rawl would surely kill her when he found her, and he would find her. She knew that now. Really knew it. He would find her. Jensen. A mad torrent of thoughts cascaded through her mind, everything from hope to despair, terror to rage. Tu wasch mischt, tu wask mischt, grushteva, du kalt mischt. The voice, too, was there, beyond the churning thoughts, beyond the turmoil of emotions, beyond the jumble of disorder, whispering to her in those strangely seductive words. In the end, all other thoughts melted away in the glowing heat of her anger. Jensen, surrender. She had tried everything else. She had no options left. The Lord Rawl had cut her off from any other hope. She had no choice. She knew what she had to do now. Jensen rose up, feeling the strange sensation of inner peace at having made the decision. She threw her cloak around her shoulders and marched out into the still, frigid, quiet night. The air was so cold that it hurt to breathe it. The snow crunched as she made her way through the fresh tracks. Shivering with the cold, or maybe the enormity of what she had decided, she knocked gently on the door to the last cabin. Sebastian pulled the door in enough to see it was her, and then quickly opened it to admit her. She hurried in through the opening, into the firelight, and cocoon of warmth. Delicious heat embraced her. Sebastian was without a shirt. By his clean scent and the towel thrown over his shoulder, she realized that she must have caught him at the washbowl. He had probably filled a washbowl in her cabin, too, though she hadn't noticed. Concern creased Sebastian's brow as he stood, posture tense, waiting to see what had brought her there. Jensen stepped up close to him, so close that she could feel the heat of him. Fists at her sides, she met his eyes boldly. I intend to kill Richard Rawl. He studied her face, accepting her determined words calmly, as if he had known all along that she would someday come to see the inescapable need. He remained silent, waiting to hear the rest of what she had to say. I know now that you were right, she said. I have to eliminate him or I'll never be safe. I'll never be free to live my own life. I'm the only one to do it, the one who must do it. She didn't tell him why it had to be her. His hand came up to grip her upper arm. His intense gaze never left hers. It will be difficult getting near such a man in order to do as you must. I've told you that we have sorceresses with the Emperor, sorceresses fighting to end the reign of Lord Rol. Let me take you to them first. Jensen had been focused on the decision rather than the details of how to go about it. She had given no thought to the approach or dealing with all the layers of people who would be protecting him. She would have to get in close enough for the killing itself. She had only pictured in her mind hitting him with her fist, clutching her knife, yelling at him, screaming how much she hated him, how much she wanted him to suffer for all he had done. She had only fixed on the deed, not on how she would come to be standing that close before him. There were practical matters she needed to take into account if she was to succeed. "Do you think these women could help me with what you said, magic used to end magic? Do you think they might be able to provide me with the means to go after him?" Sebastian nodded. "I wouldn't suggest it if I didn't. I know the destructive power of the magic on Lord Rawl's side. I've seen it with my own eyes. And I know how our sorceresses have been able to help us fight back. Magic can't do it all, but I think they can provide valuable help." Jensen held herself erect, her chin up. "I would appreciate it. I will gladly accept any assistance they can offer." A small smile curved the line of his mouth. "But know this," she added. "With or without their help, I intend to kill Richard Rawl. If I must go alone and barehanded, I intend to kill him. I will not rest until I do, because I have no life until I kill him, by his choice, not mine. I'm at the end of running. I will run no more." "I understand. I will take you to our sorceresses, then." "How far do you think it is to the old world until we can reach them?" "We won't be going to the old world for now. In the morning, we'll need to start looking for a pass to the west over the mountains. We have to begin looking for a way into the Midlands." Jensen pulled a ringlet of her hair back off her face when she noticed him looking at it. "But I thought that the Emperor and the Sisters of the Light were in the old world." Sebastian's expression twisted with a sly smile. "No, we cannot allow Lord Rawl to bring war to our people without answering his aggression, without making him pay a price. We intend to fight and win, the same as you have finally decided. Emperor Jagang is with our troops, laying siege to their seat of rule in the Midlands, the city of Adendrill. That's where the Confessor's palace is, Lord Rawl's wife's palace. We're cleaving the new world. When spring arrives, we will take Adendrill and break the back of the new world." "I had no idea. Have you known all along that Emperor Jagang would try something so bold?" Sebastian half laughed. "I'm his strategist." Jensen's jaw dropped. "You? You thought of it?" He dismissed her wide-eyed astonishment. "Emperor Jagang came to the rule of the old world because he is a genius. He had two alternatives in this, two different recommendations, to attack the Midlands or to attack Dahara first. Brother Narev advised that right is on our side and that the Creator would grant us victory either way, so he had no preference, no military advice to offer. The Emperor himself already had the goal of Adendrill in mind, though he kept silent on it until he heard the recommendations. My recommendation decided it for him. Emperor Jagang does not always use my strategy, but I was pleased that in this he saw what I saw, that taking the city and palace of Lord Rawl's wife would not only be a momentous military victory, but will also strike a great blow at our enemy's very heart. Jensen was seeing him again, as she had at first, in awe of how important he truly was. This was a man who, in part, directed the very course of history. The fate of nations and countless lives hung on Sebastian's word. "You don't think the Emperor may have taken the Confessor's palace by now?" "No," he said with certainty. "We will not waste our brave men trying to take such an important objective until the weather is with us. We will seize Adendrill in the spring, when this wretched winter is over. I think we can yet reach them in time to be there for the great event." Jensen was enthralled by the very idea of seeing such a momentous event, the forces of a free people striking a mighty blow against the Lord Rawl. At the same time, she knew it meant the beginning of the end of Dahara. But it really only meant the end of evil rule. In the crackling firelight, it seemed a remarkable night in more ways than one. The world was changing, and she was going to be a part of it. She had changed this night, too. The fire was warm on the side of her face. She realized that she had never seen Sebastian without a shirt. She liked the sight. His other hand came up gently to grasp her other arm. "Emperor Jigang will like to meet you."
"Me? But I'm no one important."
"Oh, yes, Jensen. Jigang the Just will be eager to meet you, I can promise you that. To meet the brave woman who wishes to strike such a blow for our courageous people, for the future of a free mankind, and finally bring an end to the scourge of the House of Rawl. For such an historic event as the taking of Adendril and the Confessor's Palace, Brother Narev himself intends to travel up from the Old World to witness the great victory on behalf of our people. I'm sure he, too, would be most pleased to meet you."
"Brother Narev?"
Jensen thought about the sweep of events that until now she had no idea were taking place. Now she was a part of those momentous events. She felt a kind of thrill that she would meet Jigang the Just, a real emperor, and maybe even Brother Narev, who Sebastian said was just about the most important spiritual leader ever to have lived. Without Sebastian, none of it would be possible. He was such a remarkable man, everything from his wonderful blue eyes and his exotic spikes of white hair, to his handsome smile and extraordinary intellect.
"Since you had a hand in planning the campaign, I'm happy that you'll be there to see your strategy triumph. I admit, too, that I would be honored to be in the presence of such great and noble men."
Even though Sebastian seemed as modest as always, she still thought she saw a spark of pride in his eyes. But then he turned serious. "When we meet with the Emperor, you mustn't be alarmed by what you see."
"What do you mean?"
"Emperor Jigang has been marked by the Creator with eyes that see more than ordinary men can see. Foolish people are frightened by his looks. I wanted to forewarn you. You mustn't be frightened of such a great man simply because he looks different."
"I won't be.
It's settled then." Jensen grinned. "I agree to your new strategy. We can leave for the Midlands, the Emperor, and the Sisters of the Light in the morning." It seemed he hardly heard her. His gaze wandered her face, her hair, returning at last to her eyes. "You're the most beautiful woman I've ever met." Jensen felt his fingers tighten on her arms, pulling her closer.
"You favor me with such words," she heard herself say.
He was a trusted advisor to an emperor. She was just a girl who grew up in the woods. He influenced history. She simply ran from it. Until now. And yet, he was just Sebastian, a man she talked with, traveled with, ate with. She had seen him yawn from exhaustion and fall asleep countless times. He was a fascinating mix of nobility and commoner. He seemed to chafe at being held in awe, yet by his manner he seemed to court it, if not demand it. "I'm sorry at how inadequate those words sound," he whispered, looking very humble. "I mean so much more than that you're merely beautiful."
"You do?"
Her words were more than a question. They were expectant wonder. Sebastian's mouth met hers in a rush. His arms surrounded her. She held her hands out to the side, afraid to hug him, because if she did, she would have to touch his naked flesh. She stood in his arms, her own arms held out stiffly, her spine arched back under the press of him. His mouth felt luscious against hers. His arms did more than encircle her, they sheltered her. Her eyes closed as she sagged into his kiss. His whole body felt so hard against hers. His fist seized her hair at the nape of her neck, holding her as he moaned against her lips. As his warm tongue unexpectedly filled her mouth, Jensen's head was spinning with the delicious sensations. The world seemed to be tipping, and she felt as if she were hanging in his arms. She felt the sudden press of the bedding against her, the shock of being on her back with him atop her, had her suddenly confused and not knowing what to do or how to react. She wanted to stop him before he went any further. At the same time, she feared to do anything that would cause him to stop, to believe she was spurning him. It occurred to her how very alone they were. Such isolation worried her, yet it excited her too. With the two of them so completely alone, only she could stop him. The choices that she made not only decided her own path, but also held sway over Sebastian's heart. It gave her a comforting sense of power. But it was just a kiss. More of a kiss than in the palace, but still just a kiss. A head-spinning, heart-pounding kiss. She surrendered herself into his embrace, daring to use her tongue as he did his, and was exhilarated by his ardent response. She felt like a woman, a desirable woman. Her hands ran up the smooth skin of his back, feeling the landscape of his bone and muscle, unhindered by a veil of cloth, feeling him flex as he pressed against her. She could hardly get her breath with the wonder of such feelings. "Jen," he whispered breathlessly into her ear, "I love you." Jensen was stunned, speechless. It didn't seem real. It felt like she had to be dreaming it, or living in someone else's body. She knew she'd heard him say it, but it just didn't seem real to her. Her heart was racing so fast that she feared it might burst. Sebastian's breath, too, came in desperate pulls, as if his lust for her were driving him mad. She clung to him, eager to feel the warm breath of his words in her ear again. She feared to believe him, though, to allow herself to believe him, to know if it was real, if this was really happening to her, or if she was only imagining it.
"But you can't mean it."
Her words were a wall to protect her.
"I do," he panted. "I do. I can't help myself. I love you, Jensen."
His warm breath tickled her in a way that ran a scrumptious shiver up through the core of her. For some reason, the memory of Tom came into her mind. She saw him in her mind's eye smiling at her in that way of his. This would not be Tom's manner. She didn't know how she knew that, but she did. Tom would not approach the subject of love in this fashion. For some reason, she felt a stab of ache for Tom.
"Sebastian, tomorrow we will leave to carry out our destiny."
Jensen nodded against his shoulder, marveling at how those words somehow sounded passionate. Their destiny. She held on tight, feeling the slick warmth of his back, feeling him push himself against her leg, feeling his arm lying across her belly as his hand caressed her hip, in a way hoping he would say something to thrill her, to frighten her, at the same time praying he wouldn't.
"But this night is ours, Jen. If you will only seize it."
"Jensen."
"Sebastian." "I love you, Jensen. I love you."
"Jensen." She wished the image of Tom would leave her mind.
"Sebastian, I don't know what—"
"I never wanted to. It wasn't my intention to allow myself to feel this way, but I do. I love you, Jen. I didn't expect it. Dear Creator, I can't help myself. I love you."
Her eyes closed as he kissed her neck. It felt so good feeling his intimate whispers in her ear, a whisper that in a way sounded close to a painful confession, laced with regret, anger, yet thick with desperate hope.
"I love you," he whispered again.
"Jensen." Jensen shuddered with the pleasure of the sensation, with the pleasure of feeling like a woman, of knowing that her mere existence thrilled a man. She had never felt particularly attractive before. Right then, she felt more than beautiful. She felt seductively beautiful.
"Surrender."
She kissed his neck as he shifted his weight. She kissed his ear and ran her tongue along it, as he had done to her. His whole body felt afire. She froze when his hand slid up under her dress. His fingers glided over her bare knee, over her bare thigh. It was her choice to make, she told herself. It was. She gasped, eyes wide, staring up at the dark rafters. His mouth covered hers before she could say the word wanting to come out. Her fist pounded his shoulder once in frustration at not being able to say that one short, important word. She gripped his face to push him away, to allow her to say it. But this was the man who had saved her life. If not for him, she would have been killed along with her mother that rainy night. She owed him her very life. Letting him touch her in such a way was nothing in exchange for that. What harm was it? It was a small thing compared to the way he had opened his heart to her. Besides, she cared for him. He was a man any woman would desire. He was handsome, smart, and important. Moreover, she was excited that he cared so for her. She was. What more could she want? She forcefully banished the unwanted image of Tom from her mind by focusing all her attention on Sebastian and what he was doing to her. His touch weakened her in a way that made her ache. His fingers felt so good that tears ran down her cheeks. She forgot the word, wondering why she would ever have wanted to say it. Her fingers clutched the back of his head, holding on for dear life. Her other fist pressed against the sides of his ribs as she cried out at what he was doing to her. All she could do was pant as she squirmed, helpless, at the indecent delight of it.
"Sebastian," she gasped. "Oh, Sebastian."
"I love you so much, Jen." He forced her knees farther apart. He pushed himself between her trembling legs.
"I need you, Jensen. I need you so. I can't live without you. I swear I can't."
It was supposed to be her choice. She told herself that it was.
"Sebastian."
"Surrender."
"Yes," she breathed. "Dear spirits, forgive me. Yes."
Chapter 35. Oba leaned a shoulder against the red-painted side of a wagon set back out of the way. Hands in his pockets, he casually surveyed the busy marketplace. People crowding among the open-air stands seemed in a festive mood, possibly because, at long last, spring was nearly at hand, even if winter was not yet ready to relinquish its harsh grip. Despite the biting chill, people chatted and chuckled, bargained and bickered, purchased and perused. Little did the shuffling crowds braving the cold wind know that someone important was among them. Oba grinned. A Rawl was among them, a member of the ruling family. Since he had decided to become invincible, and over the course of his long journey north, Oba had become a new man, a man of the world. At first, after the death of the troublesome sorceress and his lunatic mother, he was a swirl in newfound liberty and hadn't given any thought to coming to the people's palace. But the more he considered the pivotal events that had taken place and all the new things he had learned, the more he had come to realize that the journey was vital. There were still bits missing, bits that could lead to trouble. That Jensen woman had said that Quads hunted her. Quads only hunted important people. Oba was concerned that they might turn to hunting him too, since he was important. Like Jensen, he was also one of those holes in the world. Althea hadn't explained to him what that meant, but it made Oba and Jensen both special in some way. It somehow linked them. It was possible that Lord Rawl had learned about Oba, maybe from the treacherous Lethea, and he feared having a rightful rival who could challenge him. Oba was, after all, also a son of Darkin Rawl, an equal in many ways. Lord Rawl had magic, but Oba was invincible. With all the potential trouble brewing, Oba thought it best to look after his own interests by traveling to his ancestral home to learn what he could. Even before he had decided to travel north, Oba had had his concerns. Still, he enjoyed his visits to new places and had learned many new things. He kept lists of them in his head. Places, sites, people. Everything meant something. In quiet moments, he would go over those mental lists, seeing what things fit together, what revelations he could divine. It was important to keep the mind active, he always said. He was a man on his own now, making his own decisions, choosing his own road, doing as he pleased, but he still had to learn and grow. But no more did Oba have to feed the animals, tend the garden, mend fences and barns and houses. No longer did he have to haul and fetch and obey every foolish whim of his lunatic mother. No more did he have to endure the troublesome sorceress's loathsome cures, her furtive glances. No more did he have to listen to his mother's tirades, her taunts, or be subjected to her venomous humiliation. To think she had once had the gall to order him to pick away at a frozen mound of muck, him, the son of Darkin Rall himself. How Oba put up with it, he didn't know. He supposed that he was a man of remarkable patience, one of his many stellar traits. Since his maniacal mother had always been so harshly adamant that he never spent money on women, Oba had celebrated his freedom from her tyranny. Once he reached a good-sized city by visiting the most expensive whore he could find. He understood, then, why his mother had always been so dead-set against him being with women. It was enjoyable. He had found, though, that those women, too, could be cruel to a man of his sensitivity. They, too, would sometimes try to make him feel small and unimportant. They, too, would fix him with that calculating, callous, condescending gaze he so hated. Oba suspected that it was his mother's fault. He suspected that even from the world of the dead she might still manage to reach into this world, through a whore's cold heart, to vex him in his most triumphant moments. He suspected that her dead voice whispered vicious things in the women's ears. It would be just like her to do that. Even in her eternal rest, she would not be content to let him have any peace or satisfaction. Oba wasn't a spendthrift, not by any means, but the money that had so rightly been his did bring him some well-deserved pleasures, like clean beds, good food and drink, and the company of attractive women. He tended his money carefully, though, lest he end up without it. People, he knew, were only too covetous of his wealth. He had learned that just having money, though, brought him favors, especially from women. If he bought them drinks or small gifts, a pretty piece of cloth for a scarf, a trinket for their wrist, a shiny pin for their hair, they were more likely to cozy up to him. They often took him somewhere quiet, where they could be alone with him. Sometimes it was an alley, sometimes it was a deserted wood, sometimes it was a room. He suspected that some of them just wanted to get at his money. Still, it never failed to amaze him what entertainment and satisfaction he could derive from a woman, frequently with the aid of a sharp knife. Being a man of the world, Oba knew about women now. He had been with many. Now he knew how to talk to women, how to treat women, how to satisfy women. There were a number of women still waiting, hoping, praying he would one day return to them. Several had even deserted their husbands, expecting they might win his heart. Women couldn't resist him. They fawned over him, delighted over his looks, marveled at his strength, moaned at the way he pleasured them. They especially enjoyed it when he hurt them. Anyone less sensitive than he would fail to recognize their tears of joy for what they really were. While Oba enjoyed the company of women, he knew he could always have another. So he didn't become entangled in long love affairs. Most were brief, some very brief. For now, he had more important matters on his mind than women. Later, he would have all the women he could ever want, just like his father had. Now, at last, he could look upon the soaring stone splendor of his true home, the people's palace. Someday it would be his. The voice had told him so. A hawker pushed in close beside him, disturbing Oba's pleasant thoughts, his imagining of what lay ahead for him.
"Charms for you, sir, magic charms. Good luck for sure."
Oba frowned down at the hunched hawker.
"What?" "Special charms with magic. Can't go wrong for a silver penny."
"What do they do?"
"Well, sir, the charms are magic, sure. Wouldn't you like a bit of magic to ease the terrible struggles of life? Make things go your way for a change, only a silver penny."
Things did go his way, now that his lunatic mother wasn't around to pester him and keep him down. Still, Oba did like to learn new things.
"What will this magic do? What kinds of things?
Great things, sir, great things give you strength, it will, strength and wisdom, strength and wisdom beyond any normal mortal man.
Oba grinned. I already have that. The man was at a loss for words for only a moment. He looked over each shoulder, making sure no one was close before he leaned in closer, pushing against Oba's side, in order to speak confidentially. He winked up at Oba.
These magic charms will help win the girls for you, sir.
Women already can't get enough of me. Oba was losing interest. This magic promised only what he already had. The man might as well say that the charms would give Oba two arms and two legs. The filthy little man cleared his throat, thick with phlegm, as he leaned close again.
Well, sir, no man can have enough wealth, or the most beautiful.
I'll give you a copper penny if you can tell me where I can find the sorceress Althea. The man's breath stank. Oba pushed him back. The hawker lifted a crooked finger. His wiry eyebrows rose as well.
You, sir, are a wise man, just as you said. I knew I saw something keen about you. You, sir, have ferreted out the one man in this market who can tell you what you need.
He thumped his chest.
Me, I can tell you all you need to know on the subject, but as a man of your wisdom will no doubt realize such obscure and privileged information will of necessity cost you a great deal more than a copper penny. Yes, sir, a great deal more, and worth it.
Oba frowned. How much more?
A silver mark.
Oba grunted a laugh and started walking away. He had the money, but he didn't appreciate being played for a fool. I'll ask around. Decent people can offer such simple help as directions to the sorceress, and they will expect nothing more than a tip of my cap. The hawker scurried along at Oba's side, eager to renegotiate, speaking hurriedly as he struggled to keep up. Loose ends of his ragged outfit flapped like flags in the breeze as he dodged people, dodging Oba.
Yes, I can see you're a wise man indeed. I'm afraid I'm no match for you, sir. You've bested me. That's the simple truth of it. But there are more knotty matters you don't know about. Matters a man of your rare sensitivity should know. Things which could very well mean your safety in such a dangerous venture as I think you may be about to undertake. Things which not many folks can tell you true.
Oba was sensitive. That much was true. He gazed down at the man shuffling along sideways like a dog begging for a scrap. A silver penny, then. That's all I'm offering.
A silver penny, then, he conceded with a sigh, for the valuable information you need, sir, which I warrant you will hear nowhere else.
Oba halted, satisfied that the man had caved in to the superior intellect. Hands on his hips, he stared down at the hopeful fellow licking his cracked lips. It was against Oba's nature to part with money so easily, but he had plenty, and something about this intrigued him. He fished around in his pocket, slipping two fingers into the leather purse he kept there, and drew out a silver penny. He flipped it to the scruffy fellow. All right, then. As the man caught the coin, Oba caught the hawker's bony wrist. I will give you the price you ask, but if I don't think you're telling it true, or if I suspect that you're holding back on me, I'll take back the coin, and I'll have to wipe your blood off it before I return it to my pocket. The man swallowed at the dangerous look on Oba's face.
Sir, I'd not cheat you, especially not once my word is given.
You'd best not. So where is she? How can I find Althea?
In a swamp she lives. But I can tell you how to get into her, for only—
Do you think I'm a stupid oaf? Oba twisted the wrist. I've already heard that people go to see this sorceress, that she receives visitors in her swamp, so something more than the way into her place had better be included in the fair price I've given you.
Yes! The hawker gulped in pain. Of course it is.
Oba eased up. Still wincing, the man was quick to go on.
I was going to say that I will tell you the secret way to get to her through the swamp for the generous price you've already paid. Not just the regular way in, which folks know, but the secret way in as well. Few, if any, know of it. All included in the price. I'd not hold anything back from a fair man like you, sir.
Obar glared. Secret way in? If there is a regular way, a way people use to see Althea, why would I care about this other way?
People go in to see the sorceress Althea for a telling. She's a powerful one, this sorceress.
He leaned closer.
But you must be invited before you can go in to see her for a telling. None dare to go without being invited. People all go in the same way so as she can see them coming, after she's invited them in and withdrawn her bloodthirsty beasts that guard the path.
A sly smile spread across the man's twisty face.
It seems to me that if you were invited in, you wouldn't need to ask people how to get there. Have you been invited, sir?
Oba gently pushed the reeking hawker back. So there is another way in?
There is. A back way in. A way to sneak up on her, if you're of a mind, while her beast scarred the front door, as it were. A smart man might not choose to approach a powerful sorceress on her terms.
Oba glanced to the sides, checking that people weren't listening. I don't need to go in any secret back way. I'm not afraid of the sorceress, but as long as I've already paid for it, I'll hear it all told, both ways in and everything else about her, too.
The man shrugged. If you're of a mind, you can simply ride due west, as the folks who was invited to Althea's place do. You travel west across the plains until you come to the largest snow-capped mountain. Beyond the mountain, you turn north and follow along the base of the cliffs. The land goes lower until it finally enters the swamp. Just follow the well-kept path on in through the swamp. Stay on that path. Don't wander off. It leads to the home of the sorceress Althea.
But the swamp would be frozen this time of year.
No, sir. This is the wicked place of a sorceress and her menacing magic. Althea's swamp does not bow to winter.
Oba twisted the man's wrist until he cried out, Do you think me a fool? No place is a swamp in winter.
Ask anyone, the man squealed.
He swept his other arm around.
Ask anyone and they'll tell you Althea's place doesn't bow to the Creator's winter, but it is hot and boggy all year round.
Oba let up on the man's wrist. You said there was a back way in. Where is it? For the first time, the man hesitated. He licked his weather-cracked lips.
It's difficult to find. There are a few landmarks, and they're hard to spot. I could tell you how to find the place, but you might miss it, and then you'll think I lied to you, when it's only that it's tricky to find by directions alone if you're not familiar with the land in these parts.
I'm already thinking about having my coin back.
I'm only looking to your safety, sir.
He flashed a quick, apologetic smile.
I don't like giving a man like you only part of what he needs, for fear I might live to regret it. I believe in giving the full measure of my word.
Go on. The hawker cleared his wet throat and then spat to the side. He wiped his mouth with the back of his filthy sleeve.
Well, sir, the best way to find it is if I take you there.
Oba checked an older couple passing nearby, then pulled the man by his wrist. Fine, let's go. The hawker dug in his heels.
Now hold on there. I agree to tell you, and I can do that. Like I said, though, it's hard to find, but I can't be expected to give up my business to go off as a guide. It's a number of days I'd be away from an income.